Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello one and all, and a warm welcome to Book Off, the literary podcast with a difference. I'm Joe Haddo, and I will be the ringmaster for the War of the Words, which will be happening a little later between two fabulous writers. My first guest is the gardening correspondent for The New Yorker and wins first prize for the job title alone, and the author of five novels. These include Daughters of Jerusalem, When We Were Bad, and Almost English, which was longlisted for both the Booker Prize and the Women's Prize for Fiction. Here to tell us about her latest book, The Exhibitionist, it's Charlotte Mendelsohn. Hello to you.
Hello, Joe.
Lovely to have you with us, Charlotte. And my second guest is a writer, workshop leader, and award-winning art PR consultant, don't you know? Her debut young adult novel, Bear Mouth, was awarded the Waterstones Children's Book Prize and was chosen as Children's Book of the Year in The Times, no less. Here to tell us about her debut adult novel, which is called The Gifts, it's Liz Hyder. Welcome to you, Liz.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
well, we've waded through technical swamps to make it here. And Liz, Charlotte, Liz.
It's so lovely to meet you, Charlotte. And I love The Exhibitionist. I've got so many questions. I'm so excited about it. It's wicked. It's wickedly, darkly funny and fabulous and amazing. I loved it. I've got all the questions.
You're a sweetheart. Thank you so much. And I've only read a little bit because I've actually unusually got three novels on the go for different reasons, and I'm finding it very stressful. But I allowed a tiny window to open, so I started The Gifts. And so far, I just think, how the hell are you so daring and confident? It's amazing. It's so exciting to have that confidence or apparent confidence in just writing such an exciting subject. Honestly, I'm really impressed.
Oh, wow.
I'm really a bit annoyed.
I'm gonna keep this bit of the recording in treasury. I'm gonna wear it as an amulet, like a kind of
a massive cyber amulet
to ward off the evil of, you know, Goodreads.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Oh, bless you. Thanks.
We're going to talk about your two new books over the next 30 minutes or so. Both brilliant novels. I love them both. We also do the Book Off, of course, which is where each of you gets to pitch us a book that you absolutely love and think we should all read. And I must tell you, Liz, Charlotte's pretty fired up about this. She's feeling pretty competitive today.
Wow. I'm really interested to know what your one is. Did you find it difficult to choose? Because I kind of managed to narrow it down to about three, and then I was umming and ahhing quite a lot.
I actually didn't, because I just immediately chose the book that I always am absolutely evangelical about. I don't know if I'm allowed to reveal its title yet, but
Of course you can.
It's Villette.
Oh,
have you read it?
Yes, a long time ago. It's a strange, odd, haunting book.
Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed and slightly bonkers about it. And there are other books that I did then think, oh, well, I also love blah 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 blah. But the thing is, Villette, like everyone I've ever taught creative writing to, either has now read it and loves it or will never read it, because it's like their mum saying, eat more cabbage. It's like,
it's a no very one good escapes. Book for you. It's good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no one escapes my loopy Villette campaign. So I'm bloody going to do it on this.
I can't wait. I literally can't wait.
I nearly went for Cranford, actually, because that's probably one of the books that I've shoved into people's hands so many times.
Oh,
just
because
it makes me laugh so much. It's such a funny book. And, like, you know, North and South is not. And Cranford feels so different. And I do love it, but I didn't go for that either. Yeah.
That's interesting, because I read Cranford a long, long time ago, and I really enjoyed it. And I can't remember anything about it. And I've meant to read North and South ever since, and I never have. Shall I, or shall I just reread Cranford?
Reread Cranford.
Okay. There you go. Decision made.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Okay, done.
North and South Tick. Is fantastic, but it is, I mean, it is, you know, it is, it's grim up north. It's, you know, and the death count is high. I mean, it's a brilliant book, but I love, she's so good at writing lightness, and there's so much lightness in Cranford, and it's so beautifully well observed, and so I just love it. I think it's such a great book. And it's really short, so you can read it really quickly.
It's a massive bonus.
Just say it.
Yes, it is. Especially when you've got three novels on the go, Charlotte.
Yeah,
you need a short one.
A snack novella in between your three books on the go, juggling.
Okay, I actually will. Thank you.
Let's talk about The Exhibitionist then, because this is a book that's, it's been 9 years, I think, since your last novel.
It has.
Which is amazing. So this is a very long-awaited novel for all us Charlotte Mendelssohn fans. Perhaps you could just start by telling us about the family that is the centre of this story and sort of set up the start of this book for us.
I want you to know that this is my first sort of exhibitionist-specific event, because it's out in a month. And so I don't know how to talk about it yet. So this is going to be hilarious.
You're going to learn as we go.
I have no idea how to describe this book. So it's about a family, which my books always are. They're called the Hanrahans. And the parents are artists. And the father is a very difficult, briefly very famous, and less so now, painter. And his wife is a sculptor who's sort of, to those in the know, on the up. But in the family, that's a bit of a taboo subject because Ray is so tricky. And they have three adult children, two of whom still live at home. And so it's what I love writing about, which is basically a pressure cooker. But the modern pressure cookers don't explode, so maybe I need to change my analogy. I love writing about people in very claustrophobic environments where everyone thinks they know everything about them, but their inner lives are completely at odds with how they're meant to be. So everyone's in love with the wrong person or hates the wrong person or is losing their marbles or whatever. And then the pressure builds and builds until absolute chaos. So the book is a sort of, it's only set over 48 hours, and it's from where things look like they're okay to bedlam and
I think
waving
that's
my arms around.
A perfect way of describing it.
Okay,
and Liz
thanks.
Is nodding as well. I think you've nailed it.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Nailed it.
Good. Phew.
And Ray is like magnificently monstrous.
He's a horrible man.
He's awful. He is that monstrous and magnificent. He is awful.
Good.
I was so mad at him, like, just so unbelievably mad at him and by like page 20, I just sort of really had a deep-seated dislike for this man.
Well, it was funny. I like writing about awful people, but obviously, and I don't believe that thing. You know how sometimes on Amazon reviews, people go, you know, one star, I didn't like any of the characters. I think that's not sensible. I think you can love reading about awful characters, but the difficult thing is getting that balance. So with Ray, I didn't want to inhabit his point of view. I want to inhabit the lives of all the people who are sort of narcissistically bruised by him, because he's such an arse, if I may say so.
Storm Eunice is
she kicking off outside?
Kicking off some outside the window there. So, and right at the beginning of the book, we meet Lucia, who is Ray's wife, who's sort of put her own career second and many other things, you know, second for her family and for him. And I want, do you think this is still a common thing in couples who work in the same field?
I think it's enormously common. Because it's funny, I've been writing about this. I think it's enormously common because writers and other artists are often, but obviously not always, introverted, oversensitive, thin-skinned, analytical, bit neurotic. And I say that lovingly as one who spends her entire life working with these people. And so in a way, they're the worst people to be novelists, but they're the worst people to be with other ones as well. So I think all artists are tricky, and two together is potentially a bit of a recipe for disaster, but it can work. It's just that with someone like Ray, who's a narcissist and wildly competitive and imposes his feelings on everyone else, of course it doesn't. So the only way to stay married to him is suppress everything. And so I suppose the point with Lucia is that she reaches the point where things can't be suppressed any longer. So of course there's going to be, you know, extreme explosions. Drama.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it made me think, Charlotte, of an artistic couple called, Idris Khan and Annie Morris, who are married and they're both artists and they sort of share, they have their own studios, but they're connected. And I just think they're wonderful and they're so supportive of each other's work as well. And it's just so interesting that they have found this way to be. And they do different arts as well. They do different disciplines. So I'm sure that slightly helps. But it just put me in mind of that because it made me think, oh, I sort of know of this couple who are actual artists who work
That's
together
interesting.
Almost. Yeah.
It's funny because I've met so many, it's a revolting phrase, but kind of creative couples over the years. And so few of them do work successfully like that. Or they work, rarely they work successfully in private. In public, yeah. Everyone says, yes, he's very supportive, because of course they're going to say that. But I think rarely in private does it work. And I think the way it works, it helps if they do different disciplines, but so do Ray and Lucia. I think actually it's about people being secure enough not to take out their insecurities on the other person. So Ray can't deal with the slightest, smallest success for Lucia. And if they were both, doctors or whatever, I think it would be the same. I think Ray just is basically impossible to be married to. But being an artist kind of, exacerbates that, because artists are meant to behave badly.
There's also the element that he did have the success as well, which plays into it.
He did have the success, but I think his personality is just not, it's just a bit unfortunate. And the thing is that Lucia, who married him when he was older and more successful, well, he's always older than her, but she was younger, he was older, he was more successful, it was incredibly glamorous and exciting. And then 30 years later, she's sort of compressed and repressed and depressed and frustrated and stuck. But actually, things are brewing to make her have to change things, because that's what fiction's about, isn't it? It's the point where things change, where the status quo can't remain the same. And that's what, that's one of the things I find incredibly exciting, is when can't people keep up the pretense anymore?
I want to come back and talk about it a bit more in a moment, Charlotte. Liz, if I could just come to you and talk about the gifts. And I'm right in thinking that it was about 11 years ago now that you moved out of London and you went to Shropshire, which is where you live, and you found these surroundings pretty inspiring, I'd say, to your writing, haven't you?
Yeah, it's 12 years ago this year. So 12, yeah. My top tip is for people who make a big move, wherever it is or whatever it is, if you do it in a year that's really easy to remember, like a nice even year, like 2010. So it's 12 years ago. And yeah, I have. It's a really interesting place. I'm in South Shropshire in a little town called Ludlow, which is it's ancient. So St Lawrence's Church, which is kind of right in the centre of town, which is sort of known as the Cathedral of the Marches. And it is a spectacular building, but it was built on like a Neolithic long barrow. So there's just like so many layers of history here, and so many layers of history sort of in the hills surrounding you, like every sort of every hill has like a hill fort at the top, pretty much. And I just find, I find that inspiring, and I find being surrounded by a very different sort of beauty, because I think cities are beautiful as well. I'm not, you know, I love London, and I love Manchester, and I love Bristol, and I love Cardiff. You know, I love cities. Mm. But for me, being here, there's something about being rooted in a more rural environment that has kind of brought back to life my love of nature that I kind of had as a kid. That was always been there, but it's sort of maybe a little bit hidden, and it's kind of been allowed to reemerge. So yeah,
Can I just say something hilarious, which is, my old English teacher lives in Ludlow.
No.
Yes. And my other old English teacher lives near Ludlow. Yes.
No way.
So it's obviously the best town in the world.
Hey, that's amazing.
Oh my God, how exciting.
Why haven't we all moved to Ludlow?
I know. Why haven't we moved to Ludlow? This has changed. We'd like to announce that this is now a relocation.
Yes, exactly. Shove the books. Let's talk
real
about the location.
Time. Yeah.
It is. Do you know what? I'm not surprised though, because it's an extraordinary place. It's an extraordinary town, and it's full of all sorts of amazing, interesting, weird, arty, creative people. Loads of musicians, lots of writers, lots of artists. It's an amazing place. It's a little gem. I love that you're old English.
I'm so envious. Also, it's famous for food. I mean, why am I here right now? I'm getting on a train as soon as Eunice calms down.
You need to come up for the food festivals. The food festivals are a huge fun.
Do.
I'm just saying.
This has gone in an unexpected direction.
This has, but you know, I'm loving the fact that we're already planning our trip to the food festival, Charlotte. This is great.
We are. I actually am. Yeah.
We'll take you on a tour around as well, you know. Come on, you should do it. It'd be wicked.
Oh my God. I've actually only ever been to Hay once, and not for the festival. And I've often thought, why do I not live in a town of secondhand bookshops? So honestly, I'm going to go, which is it, west, urgently.
Well, yes, Hay's only like 50 minutes from here, I'm just saying. Oh, so, God. You know, you could kind of live in Ludlow and then visit Hay, bankrupt yourself on all those like lovely first edition, ancient, lovely antique books.
Oh, yum.
That's the only problem with going to Hay. You come back checking your bank account thinking, what happened?
I do that on Kentish Town Road, because basically every single charity shop I have to go into and buy a rucksack full of books every single time I pass.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed.
Did you used to go to Charing Cross? Because I was at Charing Cross Road the other day, and it's not full of bookshops in the way that it used to be.
It's not what it was.
It's not what it was. And you know what? I miss it. But my bank account is definitely happier that it's not what it was. I mean, I used to go down there. Well, I worked at the British Library for a bit before university. And that
Did
makes
you?
It sound a lot more glamorous than it was. It was basically moving books from shelf on shelf to another. So I was a shelf stacker, basically.
You were a porter, basically.
A porter, yeah, a book porter. Yeah. But I got paid on a Friday, like every week. So on a Friday, I'd be like, let's go down, Charing Cross Road. And then I'd come home with like two bags of books every week.
Yeah.
And it was...
Well, the way I basically motivate myself to do anything, whether it's a walk or work or anything, is basically secondhand bookshop or a charity bookshop. And I live in London, so it's really very... In fact, my accountant said, you've got to stop buying books.
Hey, when the accountant says it,
you've
got to take note.
I did for about a week. Oh, yeah. But actually, can I just say, I'm sorry, Joe, I know we're going miles off subject, but just very quickly, I spent a lot of time thinking, I wish I could leave my house and quickly be in the country.
Mm.
Because more and more I love nature, and I don't get very much of it where I live. Or I get very specifically urban nature. And I fantasize a lot about moving somewhere where I can get into the country. But then I don't know if it's for the likes of me.
I think it's for everyone. I mean, I'm very lucky, you know, like I came here on holiday, basically. And then I kept coming back. I was like, such a
mistake. Lost your passport. I'm still here.
I'm still in Ludlow. But I just kept coming back and I loved it. And then it was that whole thing of like, oh, maybe maybe we could retire there one day. And then I was like, I'm still in my 30s. What? I'm not going to retire. Yeah. Like, Ludlow does, you know, does not need more retired people. And then, so we just moved. My husband got made redundant from his job at the time. And we were like, well, let's see this as an opportunity. I was freelance anyway. So we came and we didn't know anyone. And in retrospect, it seems quite a reckless move. Like, let's move to that town that we've been to on holiday quite a lot, but we don't really know anyone there. Yeah. And within like a couple of months, we knew that we wanted to stay. And then it's just been a case of trying to make it work for us. But we had friends that moved to Orkney around the same time as well, and a friend that moved to South America. So we were like, ours was not the most reckless move. I think going to South America on your own was a really ballsy move by my friend Tracy Chandler. Hats off to that lady.
Hi, Tracy.
Hats off, Tracy.
I have not regretted it. And I love going back to London. Like, London is sort of will always still feel like home in a way, particularly Walthamstow, even though it's obviously changed a lot since I left. I was obviously holding it back. Now it's become trendy. But
thank God she's gone.
As soon as she left, you should have seen it. Oh.
All these nice Swedish cafes opened.
Suddenly, enormously Farrow and Ball. My God.
I left and the Farrow and Ball trucks came in to replace me. Yeah, right, she's gone. Beep, 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 as the lorries are bursting. I love it. I've not had that effect. I need to move out of Ludlow, and then Ludlow will probably become really trendy as well.
Oh, then it'll become super trendy. Super trendy. Can you let me know before you do? And we might, we should put a little place investment in there so that it blows up when you leave. That'd be great.
Yeah.
But talking of London, Liz, and of the gifts, we're talking about London 1840 here. What was it that drew you to Victorian London for this book? And maybe you could just set up the story of the gifts for us.
What drew me to London for it? That's a hard question. I love London anyway, and obviously having grown up there, but I love Victorian literature, and I love books that are set in that time period anyway. And it's such a period of change. Like, we talk about the Victorian era as if it was a kind of a separate thing, but you know, it's not like the Georgian era goes into the Victorian era. It's just a way of us kind of defining different kind of periods, because you know, obviously Queen Victoria lived forever. That whole time period had such an incredible amount of change going on in it, and that was something that really appealed to me. Like, how at the beginning things are so different, and then you have like such technological change, you have huge societal change. It makes for a really kind of potent setting for me, like a potent kind of setting in terms of period. The Gifts is sort of the story of four women, really. So it's historical fiction with a bit of a twist. And it's a botanist, an artist, a storyteller, and I've got an aspiring young journalist as well. And their tales become interwoven with that of a really ruthlessly ambitious young surgeon in London. And it opens with one of the women, who's a botanist, growing a pair of spectacular wings. And it's a visceral kind of bloody experience. And it kind of goes from there, really. It's sort of a tale of danger and obsession, I suppose, but it is also about fundamentally our relationship with nature and the importance of sort of looking up and out at the world. And that was something that I really wanted to write about women, because Bear Mouth was a very intense, dark, dystopian sort of little thriller, but it is set in a working coal mine, so therefore it's a very male dominated world, and for this I knew I wanted to do something that was completely different. So yeah, it's about women, and set in London and also in Shropshire, obviously. I'm basically lazy
and, obviously in Shropshire.
And I can't be bothered to... So it's set in London, Shropshire and Orkney, where I've also been quite a lot as well. So that's my setting.
I know them all. I know. I write about them.
It's just set at a place where I know.
That's interesting, isn't it, though? I'm thinking a lot about that because I'm starting my... I can never remember how many novels I've written. I'm starting my sixth.
Five.
Novel, and
you've written five.
I've written five. Thanks.
This is your sixth.
You're
That's
welcome.
Amazing.
No. I'm starting my sixth now.
Yeah. This is your sixth. Yeah.
Yeah. This is my sixth. And I spend a lot of time trying to think, am I more interested in places I know really well or places I don't? And for me, it's not laziness. It's almost more what stimulates me.
Yeah.
Research is actually a lot easier than making stuff up, isn't it? So it's but it's an interest. I keep changing where it's set because I keep not knowing whether I want familiar or different.
Yeah.
But the thing is, because you're writing about the Victoria era, and obviously, I'm assuming you haven't grown wings and you haven't been a surgeon, you've got a lot of difference. Whereas I, so far, have written about contemporary people in a world not dissimilar to mine. So maybe it's the finding the difference somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't know. That's it's really interesting. I suppose I like a bit of both, really. Because it is about that. And also it's about, I think, you know, having grown up in London, having you know, sort of worked in all sorts of different places all over London at some place or another, going back and walking it and looking at those streets with your sort of kind of your Victorian hat on, you know, and sort of looking at that architecture and seeing what would have been, what still exists, what is older, what would have still been there, and imagining what those streets might have looked like, there's something really, you look at it in such a fresh way. That you look at those buildings, you look at that experience, you look at kind of how much things have changed. It kind of, I find that that's really inspiring. So although it's a familiar place, I'm looking at it in a way that is, it brings difference to it because you're looking
that's
at
really
it
interesting.
In a different way.
I've been thinking a lot about the historical and how people do it. And I've always thought that the reason I wouldn't want to write historical fiction is because for me, the kind of physical experience of my characters is such a big part of it. So I want to know what, you know, what things smell like, what, you know, what their knickers are like.
Yeah.
And I always think, well, for historical fiction, I wouldn't get that. It would be too other. I want to be able to imagine everything about their lives, even though I didn't put it in the book. But that's such an interesting way of seeing it. It's about the kind of exciting contrast between what you know and what you're imagining from the past.
Yeah, and I'm sort of the same. Like I have to experience it in a way. I mean, obviously, like you say, I haven't grown wings, and you know, I haven't time traveled to 1840. But to sort of immerse yourself in that world and to imagine what that would have felt like, and I'm really fascinated by history, and I'm particularly fascinated by Victorians, but I mean, pretty much any time period, and Neolithic as well, which is why I love kind of going up to Orkney so much. And I think it's very easy to kind of feel distant from history in a way, to kind of be like, oh, you know, those ancestors, oh, they were so different. And it's like, but they got hungry and they got tired and they got thirsty and they loved and laughed and danced and sung and, you know, lit fires and had parties and got drunk and, you know, all of those things. They did all of those things. And I think, I think we kind of class them as a bit other, when actually it's that thing of they're still us. Like, and the idea, one of the things that I wanted to explore in the gifts was that those women are frustrated. Women were frustrated with their lot. They would have been frustrated with their lot. They weren't given credit. They weren't given those opportunities. And it's I think a lot of my writing, I'm beginning to realise, it comes from a place of anger. A sense of anger and injustice.
Rage.
But that immersiveness is really important to me. And so I want to, one of the reasons I did kind of, you know, walk the streets of London with my Victorian hat on, one of the reasons that I kind of, and it's not about becoming the characters, it's almost like, this is going to sound mad, but like, you know, the whole thing of a writer is that you make up things in your head and then you try and write them down and then you try and share them with other people. And I want to kind of be those characters. So sometimes I will imagine that, like, I go for a walk with them, that they're beside me, or like I try and think, like with my botanist character, I'm obviously not a botanist. I love plants and I love wildlife. I'm not a botanist. I never will be. But what would she notice on, you know, walking down this kind of Holloway? What plants would she notice? What's unusual for this time of year? Like, you know, what can those plants be used for? And I think kind of that immersive experience is for me what kind of makes those characters real to me, and hopefully makes them real to other people when they read them.
Absolutely, yeah. And Charlotte, you talking about your sixth novel, whatever that may end up being, exciting, just sort of made me think of Monica Raleigh, who was on an earlier episode of this series of the podcast, talking about her wonderful new novel, Love Marriage, which is her first book in 10 years. And she said that part of the reason that it's taken that time between publishing the books was she actually lost confidence in her own writing, and she turned her hand to screenwriting, I think, and, you know, sort of left the novel writing behind. But it also made me wonder, when we were talking on that episode of the podcast, if we're perhaps in a bit of a publishing frenzy, and by that I mean whereby readers almost expect a new book from authors every couple of years now, that's the sort of thing. What do you think? Is that
right? I
think
it depends on the author and the kind of books they write.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously,
okay.
In, you know, crime or what's annoyingly called women's commercial fiction or thrillers, there is an expectation for even every year. And in, you know, book club, sort of accessible literary fiction, which I suppose is what I write, there's more leeway. But, I mean, I didn't mean it to be 9 years. I would much rather it had been 2 years.
And it wasn't,
life
it wasn't me sort of...
Yeah.
I wasn't having a go.
No. I mean, I hate that it's been 9 years. And also, I was a publisher for 20 years. So I can just, you know, I know it's not good. but I just, that too many things were going on in my life. And also, it was a really hard book to write. But the two are obviously connected. It took me a really long time to work out what the book I wanted to write was, and then to feel I could do it, and then to work out how to do it. And those are three very definite stages.
And once though all of those stages or a couple of those stages had been decided, did you write it fairly quickly, or has it taken a long time?
I've wasted hundreds of thousands of words. Well, maybe wasted is the wrong word, but I've written hundreds of thousands of words to get to this point.
Right.
And no, there were certain things that fell into place, and then I was like, oh my God, this is a completely different book. But no, aspects of it have stayed the same. It's hard to explain, but basically, I made several really fundamental decisions just in the last maybe year or two of writing it that made it possible to write it. And there was an awful lot of faffing about before. But, you know, I always like writing about adults in relation to their families of origin. I always like writing about sex, or at least desire, sexual, not even frustration, really, sort of longing. I like writing about longing. I like writing about secrets. So I write about people who are not in love with who they're supposed to be, you know, people who are unhappy in the life that they've been given. I write about queerness. I write about otherness. I write about all of those things. And it's about finding which of those applies to each novel, I suppose. And it took a really long time to work it out.
Yeah. But I tell you what, Charlotte, what a book to come back with after 9 years, or
thank
a novel
you.
To come back with, I should say, after 9 years, because it's absolutely fantastic.
That's so lovely.
I know
to
Liz
hear.
Loves it. Yeah.
Well, one of the things about not, you know, being having 9 years between novels is, I mean, I did publish a book about being obsessed with gardening. It is true. But,
yes, you did. Yeah.
But that's sort of different, because although it's kind of personal, it's also not personal. It's less personal than fiction in a weird way. So not having published a novel for 9 years, I've, you know, it's very nice to hear that people love it. So thank you. That means a lot.
Yes, really did. And before we ask you what you've both been reading and enjoying recently, and then we'll do the book off, I just want to talk about a wonderful writer and friend of our podcast, Elizabeth McNeil, who said quite recently that there's nothing she doesn't know now about Victorian cemeteries because of all the research that she's been doing for her new book. And it made me think, Liz, of you doing all the research for The Gift, because you can tell from reading it how well researched it is, and yet it's very much a show and don't tell. And I wondered how you sort of condense all that knowledge down to make sure you're not sort of just reeling off a history lesson, and yet we, the reader, feel like we know a lot more after each chapter.
Ooh, I guess for me, it's like, I mean, the research is fascinating, and I'm a magpie, like I guess every writer is, where it's like, oh, that's interesting. Do you know that? Like, you know, like I'm, yeah, right. I'll just pick up that shiny little nugget. For me, it's like, what does it add? So if it adds atmosphere, or it adds kind of setting, or it kind of, you know, it has to add something. It either has to push the story along, or it has to add something. It has to be there for a reason. So there's so much stuff that just didn't make it into the book that I just love, you know, that's fascinating things, like the people who used to, Todgers they were called, sounds a bit unfortunate, who used to kind of hang around in the sewers, and their job was basically to sift through literally wee and poo and see what they could find from it. So you would find, like, someone had, you know, like washed like a ring away or something. So there were people who kind of, the sewer men who would,
wow,
who would literally sift through other people's literally rubbish, and they're I'm trying not to swear. Can I
you can swear.
Oh, can I?
You can swear.
They're literally sifting through shit to find.
I knew you were itching to say that, Liz.
I know I was. Yeah, I was trying to restrain. I'm so bad at being restrained. I'm not very good at restraint. But yeah, there's lots of fascinating things that just I didn't put in. So yeah, for me, that's my rule. It sort of has to be there for a reason. And yes. I think, I remember I met Andrew Miller a few years ago, and I asked him what was his point when he knew that he'd done enough research, and he said when he knew what everyone was wearing underneath.
That's kind of what I mean, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting that you said that as well, that it's like, that for him...
It's the underwear continuum.
Yeah, that yeah. for him was the rule. For me, it's normally when I get to the point where I've read so many different books that I actually find errors in them, where I'm like, I think you'll find that was 1832. And then I'm like, okay, you need to stop now. Like, that's the point where it's like, yeah, you've done enough now. Because it's endlessly fascinating, and it's like I love learning. It's like, you know, so it's the research black hole is a big one to fall down into.
I don't fancy being a todger.
No,
you.
I don't fancy being a todger. I do actually, though. It's interesting that she says about cemeteries, because I do nick a lot of character names from cemeteries.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
do you do that as well?
No, I did actually. Do you know what? I hadn't thought of that. You're completely right. Jean Lux, who is the mother in Daughters of Jerusalem, which is my second novel, I got her name from a tombstone, and I'd forgotten that. Oh, wow. Thank you. But no, I mean, there's nothing like a list of names, basically, is there?
No.
And wonderful. So a cemetery is great, because people in the olden days just had hilarious surnames.
They had amazing names. And also it's great, because you can kind of, you know, for me, sort of writing the gifts, I have stolen most of the names. If you go to St. Leonard's Churchyard in Ludlow, folks, you will find those characters.
A lot of characters.
They're even by the path, because I couldn't be bothered to walk to stray that far from the path. You do a little tour just as you walk along. There's Edward, there's Mary. Just because, also they're contemporaneous, so it's great. I can just kind of steal their names, and they're not doing anything, they're just sat there. It's a bit
they're basically a resource.
They're a resource, yeah. Do you know that
name todger?
I have a name todger. Do you know the meaning of lif at all? Are you familiar with the meaning of lif?
I think I read it when I was a child, maybe, or something. What is it? There was a book.
Yes. It is the meaning of lif, isn't it? It's where it was Douglas Adams and John Lloyd.
Yes.
And they had all the sign, and it's like names for places. And they're like, but they're not doing anything. And all the things that happen in real life, all those mad little experiences that there's no word for, why don't we merge the two?
It's such a brilliant idea.
So like Scraptoft, which I think is a place in Leicestershire, is when a man's kind of gone bald but grown a long bit and then sort of combed over to try and hide the bald patch.
Scraptoft.
Yeah, I mean, there's brilliant Simmons Yat, which is not far from here, in sort of down a bit further down south. But Simmons Yat is when you have a boiled egg and you cut off the top. It's that teaspoon of egg that's in the lid, and it is genuinely. But you can play it. The whole idea is that anyone can play it. So as you're driving around, if you're bored in your car on a motorway, that you can make up the.
Match
the name, place name to the. To the description,
because there are a lot of funny place names. Hours of fun.
I'm particularly fond of Twat in Orkney.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
I've been to Twat.
Have you been to Twat?
Yeah.
Twat.
It's lovely. It's TWAT, and yeah, I'm quite fond of Twat.
I always imagine being on the phone to I'm not commenting. I always imagine being on the phone and having to give your address. It's like, yes, Mendelssohn, M-E-N-D-E-L-S-O-N, yes, twat, yes, twat.
With a double T at the end, thank you. Yeah. But you're right, there are so many great place names.
You've pinged my book buying button. So now all I can think about is, as soon as I'm off this call, is quickly getting hold of a copy of the book, The Meaning of Lift, because now I need to read them for myself.
It's fantastic. Yeah, it is fantastic. Highly recommend.
We should all go and get ourselves a copy, if we don't have it, of The Meaning of Lift, so we can play this game now, because it's endless, yeah, like you say, Liz, especially when you're sort of travelling around, walking or driving or whatever, you see these signs or someone says a word just in life and you go, oh, you know, I can assign that to I don't know, the bruise on a not quite ripened piece of fruit. Anyway, we should move on. I'm aware of the time, and we always ask our guests what they've been reading and enjoying recently, and I know, Charlotte, you've had three novels on the go that you've been reading.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's stood out that you just want to recommend very quickly that you've read in the last couple of months that's worth sort of mentioning?
The one that I am just... Well, okay, I read The Books of Jacob, which, if you know, is 1,000 pages long.
Wow.
Polish novel about... Jewish spiritualism in the 18th century, but is a lot more fun than that makes it sound. But I just before that, I read a very different book called The Last House on Needless Street by Katrina Ward, which absolutely loved. I thought it was wonderful. And now the book that I'm about to finish I'm in love with it. It's called The Transit of Venus by Shirley Hazzard. And Shirley Hazzard wrote very few novels. Her most famous one probably is The Great Fire, because that was shortlisted for the Women's Prize. But I love The Transit of Venus so much more. It's generally thought to be her best novel, and it's unbelievably good. The sentence structure, she has a very odd way of writing, so you have to concentrate quite hard to follow. Mm. She has a style that's quite peculiar. But the way she talks about all my favourite subjects, sort of love and longing and frustration and secrets and bad marriages and weird families. Oh, wow. So I do this thing I've always done when I'm reading a novel. I mark the bits I love with my fingernail. I just do a little sort of dent next to it.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Do you as well, Liz?
I do, I'm sorry, I'm laughing, because I'm like, oh my God, I thought I was the only person who did that.
No,
yeah,
I am, me too. And basically, the chapter I just read, even thinking about it gives me slight chills. The chapter I read last night basically is one big thumb mark, because I couldn't believe how brilliant it was. So, Transit of Venus, Shirley Hazzard, I would recommend to anyone. It's extraordinary.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. What a lovely set of recommendations.
Yeah, I've written them down with my rubbish little pencil just here.
what about you, Liz? Have you found time to be reading, even though you're sort of in publishing mode? Have you read and enjoyed anything recently that you want to shout about?
Oh, I mean, so many things. I mean, I read all... It's an addiction, isn't it, reading, I think?
Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah.
It is an addiction. Oh, I mean, I loved Charlotte's book so much. I think The Exhibitionist is amazing.
Thank you.
I think, you know what, I mean, it's nothing like Succession, but it has that delicious quality of watching a family implode, which in real life would be hugely upsetting, but in fiction it's just so deliciously satisfying to watch. To see, like you say, it is the pressure cooker, to see it kind of bubbling, and you know it's going to go, and you don't know quite what, you've got no idea quite what's going to happen, and it's delicious. It's a book to binge read and then to reread slowly, deliciously.
Thank you so much.
Relishing the joy.
Who was your favourite character? Because I still don't. So few people have read it still. I'm very curious to know what works.
I think Lucia. I just...
Okay.
I think, yeah. Actually saying that makes me kind of... makes my heart go a little bit... I loved her. I think she's such an extraordinary character, and I want to... She's one of those characters who you love, but you want to kind of grasp by the shoulders and sort
say,
of give
get
them
a grip!
And, you know, and that's such a hard thing to do, I think, to create a character that you love so much, that you care about so much, but that you also really... You do. You really want to shake her. You really want to go, stand up for yourself. Like, you're so amazing, and she can't... She's just been so crushed over such a long period of time in that toxic relationship. And I just, yeah, she's... Yeah, she's my favourite. Although,
you really,
I mean,
get
Ray
it.
Is so magnificent. I mean, he is magnificently monstrous. So that's just what I keep going back to. He's so
mighty
yeah.
arse.
Like, he's... Yeah. So, I absolutely loved The Exhibitionist. And I
Thank
read...
You.
What else have I read recently that I loved? The Empty Greatcoat, actually, by Rebecca F. John, which is out, I think, at the end of this month, is an extraordinary book. I love her writing. I think she's amazing. But, yeah, it's... It's immersive and beautiful, and it's about a soldier in on the front in World War One. And I've never read anything that to me captures that sense of dislocation and that sense of absolute sleep deprivation, that almost like hallucination and dream and nightmare. But it's so beautifully written and so passionate about friendship, actually. And I think it's quite rare to read a book that is absolutely about male friendship in a period setting. Felt really, it's just an extraordinary book. I loved it. And then I really, really, really loved Lizzie Pook's Moonlight and the Pearler's Daughter, which is a piece of historic fiction set in Australia. It is just a cracking, rollicking read. And it made me kind of go, oh, I kind of want to go to Australia. And then all the bitey insects and all the heat and the dust. And I was like, oh, I really don't want to go to Australia.
Don't want to go to Australia.
I'm going to stay in Ludlow and go to the
And in
festival.
Twat.
I'm going to go, and then I'll go to Orkney and visit Twat. I'm done. But they're kind of a couple that I really enjoyed recently.
Fantastic.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for those recommendations. And it's time now for another recommendation from each of you, because it's time for the Book Off, where each of you has got 3 minutes to tell us about a book you love that you think we should all read. Oh, the gloves are really off, aren't they? And before we find out what they are, we've got to do a bit of admin. We've got to decide who goes first and who goes second. And we've got to decide who is going to be rung out by the school bell or honked out by the bicycle horn at their 3 minute mark.
Oh,
so,
it's quite stressful.
Yes, it does. It does have that effect, actually, Charlotte, on a lot of people, strangely. Liz, as you're technically travelling, you're being beamed down the furthest. Would you like to go first, or would you like to go second?
I want to go second because I want to hear about Villette, because I know what Charlotte's choice is, and also
I want to see what Charlotte's made of.
And also because I haven't reread it for a long time, so I'm kind of yeah. I'm waiting for Charlotte to persuade me that I need to up it on my reread list.
And Charlotte, which, as I said, you don't have to use your 3 minutes, but if you're still talking at the 3 minute mark, we will be honking or ringing you out. Which would stress you out less, the honk or the bell?
Can I listen to the beginning? It's like we get the opportunity.
Yes, of course you may.
Darker,
of course, yes,
or this darker? Yeah. Oh my god. Could you sing me a soothing lullaby instead, maybe?
Oh no. No.
Okay,
no.
Then the first one, the honk, I think, strangely is better. The bell, yeah.
Fine, that's very good. I'm going to put 3 minutes on the clock then, Charlotte. As I said, it's uninterrupted, right, and it's over to you to tell us about the book of your choice just
I'm
before
set
I started.
The timer. Hang on.
just before we set it off, what book are you putting forward again? Just remind us.
I am putting forward Villette by Charlotte Bronte.
Fantastic. All right, 3 minutes on the clock, and it's over to you.
So, Villette is the book that I tell people, not even suggest, but tell people to read most often, because I am furious by how underrated it is. Most people haven't heard of it. A few people go, oh yeah, what? And everyone bangs on endlessly about Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre has marvellous aspects, but is, for me, ruined by the whole sappy St. John nonsense in the middle. And, okay, Villette. Villette is Charlotte Bronte's last novel. It is a masterpiece of cross, introverted, secretive, unreliable narrator brilliance. So Lucy Snow, who is the protagonist and the voice of the novel, is plain and doesn't really have friends and knows it and doesn't care. So unlike in most fiction, including Jane Eyre, where the protagonist goes, oh, I'm not very pretty and I've never known love, but then everyone falls in love with them, yeah? Oh no, not Lucy Snow. Lucy Snow is furious. She's much cleverer than everyone else. She's basically a furious young novelist. So she's cleverer than everyone else. She's extremely plain and she's pissed off. And she has this weird childhood marked by tragedy, of course. And then she goes to Brussels, which you would have thought would finish anyone off anyway. But no, there's more to come. Basically, she falls in love. Well, she falls in love in England and then in Brussels. And she is heartbroken. Her love is agonising. She is rejected. She sees irritating, if it's not unfair to say, blonde people getting the person that she loves. And she, I'm sure dark-haired, is, well, I don't know actually for sure, is not successful in love. She is clever. She is overlooked. It's all rubbish. And in the end, she finds love. And then maybe it goes horribly wrong, but the ending is unclear. But the point about it is, it's about, well, it's about unrequited love. It's about frustrated sexual longing. It's about sexy gardens at night. It's about teaching children at long tables in languages that you don't necessarily know terribly well. It's about weird Gothic architecture. It's about Gothic feeling inside someone who appears small, low-key, and maybe not terribly interesting. So it's about, it's about inner life. And it's so brilliant. The writing is extraordinarily good. But mainly, you just feel so passionately for Lucy and identify with her. But also, yeah, like Liz says, you sort of want to save her. And you want her to get love. And her, you're about to ring that bloody bell, aren't you? And then her, in the end, her loved one builds her a little house. Oh my God, what more can I want?
I'm in.
Oh, I'm fantastic.
In. You better
Brilliant,
be, because honestly, well I'm going to make you read it when I come to Ludlow.
It's a book I did read. I've read it a couple of times, but a long time ago. And it did really stay with me as a... You're right, Lucy Snow, that fierceness, that... Yeah.
We'll come back and talk about it in a moment because that was a brilliant pitch. But you can have a little breather now, Charlotte.
Thank you.
You've done your work.
Lucy Snow, she takes no shit. But you can't put that on the front of a penguin.
No, not really.
I think that should be the quote on the cover.
A new
reversion, so. Modern classic.
Well,
yeah,
or
that would work.
Lucy Snow takes no shit, Charlotte Mendelssohn. Maybe they could get away
yes,
with that
yes,
on the back.
Yeah, there
so
you
we could
go.
Frighten children.
So, it's over to you then, Liz, for your book off. I'm putting 3 minutes back on the clock. And just before we start it, tell us the book that you are pitching us today.
I'm pitching Hawkfall by George Mackay Brown, and not George Mackay Brown, as I called him for many years, until I went to Scotland and someone told me
and then
I was
got
saying
told.
Hawkfall by George Mackay Brown.
Fantastic. 3 minutes back on the clock then, uninterrupted, and it's over to you, Liz.
I don't know what I was waiting for then. I was waiting for a starter gun or something. I'm wasting time by just waffling now. So George... Thank you, Charlotte. I'll take the pop. George Mackay Brown, he's such an extraordinary writer. And I feel like Charlotte was saying with Villette, it's the underrating. Mackay Brown was from Stromness in Orkney. He's an Orcadian writer through and through. And I think Seamus Heaney said something about him that all of his stories are passed through the eye of the needle of Orkney. And he writes about everything and nothing. He writes about landscape. He writes about love and life and loss. He writes about ritual. It's about the importance of storytelling. It's about the importance of, I don't know, it's about the human condition. And Hawkfall is a series of short stories. And there are stories within stories. And it's about mythology. It's about love and war and fighting clans. It's about everything. It's the whole of human experience. And it's written extraordinarily beautifully. He was a poet as well. And he lived in Orkney, I think, almost his entire life. I think he went to Edinburgh for a while and then went back to Orkney. And it's extraordinary to read something that is so rooted in a specific place. And I guess if you like someone like Alan Garner with that same sense of sort of being rooted in Audley Edge and Cheshire, then Mackay Brown is someone for you. And I just don't think enough people have heard of him. I don't think he's as well known as he used to be. I think he's very, very loved up in Orkney and in Scotland, but he's an absolutely extraordinary writer. And when I first came across him, when I first went up to Orkney and kept seeing his books everywhere, and I was like, who is this man? And I fell in love with his writing like I fell in love with those islands. It's amazing, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. Not just Hawkfall, but all of his other books as well. But Hawkfall, because it's short stories. Joe's nodding in a way that makes me think I'm running out of time. but because it's short stories, you can dip in and out of it. And each story is so potent. It's so rich. The writing is delicious, and it's extraordinary. I cannot recommend just flicking through the pages of any George Mackay Brown and discovering this incredible writer who deserves to be much, much, much better known. I love him, and I hope that some of you will read him and fall in love with him too, and then go to Orkney if you haven't already been. That's it, I'm done.
Fantastic! 20 seconds to spare as well, Liz, so well done. Brought it in under the
wire.
You
totally sold him to me, I have to say. I'm definitely going to read him now.
I think it's because he was a poet as well. He just has a particular way of using language, and his stories are so rooted in that kind of mythology and culture and ritual of those islands that, you know, Orkney is such a extraordinary place, and I think it's quite a hard place to write about in many ways because it is so rich in history that you can sort of stand there and see, you know, Neolithic structures, you can see stuff from the two world wars, you can see all the most amazing wildlife. There's all these different layers of different things, and his writing is absolutely infused with that sense of history, that sense of time, like deep time, but just exquisitely open to you as a reader. It doesn't feel cut off like I think sometimes, you know, writing that is rooted in a specific place can feel like very separate and distant from you. But
yeah,
he brings you in, he draws you in. I love him, and yeah. Oh, I so hope you like it, Charlotte.
I will read it, I really will. Is that the one to start with?
I think, I mean, for me, yeah, because it's stories, so it's...
I'm going to put it on my list.
Yeah, because it's short stories, you can dip in and out of it, and particularly for you at the moment, reading your three other books, you can have these little nuggets of beauty and wonder. Once you've read him, you'll really love him and kind of be passionate about him and try and spread the word, really. It's the underratedness that you were saying with Villette, like that kind of people pass it over and, you know, for other books.
When I was in Orkney with Anne Cleves, I got told about him for the first time by a wonderful musician and artist up there called Erlen Cooper. And I've only read his poetry. So this short story collection sounds absolutely fabulous, and I did love the poems that I read by him. And I love Orkney as well, Liz. I think we share a sort of love of it, and I've been very lucky to have been a couple of times and would go back in a heartbeat.
I need to go,
and Charlotte, you must go.
Yeah,
you
must. My God.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, yeah. Charlotte, you must go. I mean, it's somewhere that really gets under your skin.
God, how exciting. So I love Wild.
It's extraordinary. The wildlife's extraordinary. The setting's extraordinary. Everyone is so friendly and welcoming and helpful. And like I say, all those layers of history, but the weather is so wild, you know, that the kind of joke is that you get all the seasons in a single day, and it's like you can get them in a single hour. Like it is.
Yeah.
It's,
okay, I'm going to go. You've convinced me.
It's phenomenal. And I love that you love it so much, Joe, as well. And also, Erlen Cooper, one of my absolute favourite musicians. I listened to a lot of his music when I was writing. There's bits in The Gift set in Orkney. I listened to it.
And you listened to him,
I've listened to it. Yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan. Like Erlen and the Carnival, and then his more recent stuff, he's amazing, yeah.
He is really wonderful. And yeah, so he sort of put me on to Mackay Brown, and now you've made me think, right, I want to go and read this short story collection. So thank you for that wonderful pitch. And Charlotte, I just felt the passion from you about Villette, I must say, because I loved how you said you tell people to read this book. You don't sort of suggest it. You just thrust it into their hands.
I just say, you've got to. It's so brilliant. You're missing out.
I also wrote down in capitals Sexy Gardens at Night, which I thought was a very brilliant part of your
It's
pitch.
One of my favourite themes. I've got a Sexy Garden at Night in the Exhibitionist, actually, and now about it, I'm wondering if there might be a connection.
It's probably a connection, isn't it? Do you
Sexy
think
Gardens
somehow?
Sexy Gardens at Night. I mean, honestly, what more could you want?
I mean, I just loved everything about that pitch, about the narrator who's, you know, just pissed off, and she's cleverer than everyone else. She's plain. She doesn't have friends. She doesn't care. I mean, brilliant. And yet you, as a reader, feel very passionately about her as well. I mean, two very different books, two brilliant pitches. Where do I go?
I can't believe you have to choose. I wouldn't be able to choose.
I can't believe.
And I was
no,
one
you know,
of them.
And also, I came up with this idea. What have I done to myself?
Really?
You fool. Honestly. You fool.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I'm gonna go with Villette.
I'm glad you've gone with Villette, because everyone needs to read it. But I think Liz has won for basically, she's now made me want to go to Orkney and Ludlow. Read an entire writer's oeuvre. So I'd say it's a fairly.
Who's the overall winner?
Yeah.
Who's the overall winner? You know.
I think I would have chosen Villette as well. And also, you already, you know Mackay Brown stuff anyway. So that's, you know, I think Villette needs more love.
I think it needs more.
It does. It does. Thank you. But I am going to.
And Charlotte, you sold it
I'm
so
read
well.
It in twat, maybe. For a full
yes. take a coffee up to twat. That's what
take
I'd do.
Twat.
Yeah, yeah,
we
yeah.
can start a kind of tourist campaign. Take it to twat.
Take
your favourite novel.
On tour. The Twat Literature Festival.
I tell you what, we're going to have to do a book off live from Twat, I think. That's got to happen
so
at some
up
point.
For it. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
the Twat
live
off.
Audio. All right.
No,
the
no,
Twat
no,
off.
No. No.
We'll have to workshop that, I think, Charlotte. We'll have to workshop that. The Exhibitionist by Charlotte Mendelsohn is out on the 17th of March and available to pre-order now, of course, if you're listening before that date, and it's published by The Fabulous Mantle. And The Gifts by Liz Hyder is also out now, and it's published by Manila Press. I cannot recommend these books highly enough. I've loved reading them both. I've loved spending this time with you both as well. Thank you so much for joining us on Book Off for your wonderful recommendations, and here's to our trip to Twat in the not-too-distant future.
Twat ahoy!
Hooray!
Thank you both.
Thank you both very much. I really love that. I could carry this on all day, very happy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.